It's 8 o'clock. This is New Mexico's community-powered public radio, KUNM and KUNM HD 89.9 Albuquerque, Santa Fe, KRRE 91.9 Las Vegas, KRRT 90.9 Arroyo Seco, Taos, KRAR 91.9 Española, and KBOM 88.7 Socorro. We're streaming online at KUNM.org. I'm Elaine Baumgartel. Coming up after the news update from NPR, it's the KUNM Call-In Show. We'll be talking about the Public Regulation Commission. Is it in trouble? How would you like to see the Regulation Commission changed? And what would you like to see done by lawmakers up in Santa Fe? We'll have some guests taking your questions this morning on the Public Regulation Commission. And we'd like to hear from you this morning. You can send us an email to callinshow@kunm.org. You can also call in live during the show. That's up next after the news from NPR. It's 8:01.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Paul Brown. NATO officials say two coalition service members have been killed in southern Afghanistan. NPR's Ahmad Shafi reports the U.S. soldiers were killed at a joint Afghan and American military base.
Afghan officials say the two U.S. soldiers were killed around 2 a.m. on Thursday in Jere district of Kandahar province. The district chief for Jere told NPR that an Afghan civilian literacy teacher grabbed a weapon from an Afghan National Army soldier and opened fired on American soldiers standing nearby. He says two American service members, an Afghan army soldier, and the shooter were killed in the ensuing gunfight. A Taliban spokesman said he could not confirm if the shooter was connected to the insurgents. But Afghan officials say they have recovered documents showing a possible link between the shooter and the insurgents. Ahmad Shafi, NPR News, Kabul.
Latest reports from the besieged Syrian city of Homs indicate President Bashar al-Assad's most elite unit is approaching for a possible final assault on the opposition there. Syrian National Council President Burhan Galun, an opposition leader, says here through an interpreter that the council and the Free Syrian Army welcome defectors from the government military.
We tell them that there is still a room for you to jump ship.
There are reports that the military is preparing to lay siege not just to Homs but to other cities and towns in an effort to stamp out all opposition. The conservative billionaire Koch brothers and President Obama's re-election campaign are trading rhetorical volleys. NPR's Peter Overby says it began when an Obama campaign fundraising pitch said the Kochs, quote, founded and funded the advocacy group Americans for Prosperity.
The fundraising email from Obama campaign manager Jim Messina called Americans for Prosperity a front group for the Kochs. It's known that Koch brothers' money helped to launch AFP, but beyond that, it's an advocacy group that doesn't reveal its donors. AFP President Tim Phillips accused Messina of vilifying grassroots organizations. Then a Koch Industries executive wrote to Messina, admonishing the president's campaign for targeting individual citizens and private companies. And in the latest round, first reported on the Washington Post website, Messina wrote back that there's only one way to show AFP's grassroots: release its donor lists. Peter Overby, NPR News, Washington.
Conservative columnist and blogger Andrew Breitbart is dead at age 43, the cause not yet known. The Los Angeles County coroner confirms Breitbart's death. Last month at a conservative political conference, Breitbart issued what he called a war cry.
You need to join me in this war against the institutional left.
Breitbart was known for his exposés as well as political writings. His latest book is Righteous Indignation, Excuse Me While I Save the World. Stocks are up in early trading, the Dow up 76 points. This is NPR News.
KUNM programming is supported by the law firm of Rothstein, Donatelli, Hughes, Dahlstrom, Schoenberg, and Bienvenue, with offices in Santa Fe, Albuquerque, and Phoenix since 1976. For information, rothsteinlaw.com.
Good morning. This is the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm Elaine Baumgartel. Thanks for joining us this morning. Today, we're going to host a conversation about the Public Regulation Commission of New Mexico. It's a commission that has been mired in scandal, some would say, from the very moment it was created in the mid-90s. And it's also one of the more powerful commissions of elected leaders in the state. And we're hearing from a couple different people today. We've got Fred Nathan from Think New Mexico, a nonprofit think tank in the studio
this morning. We're also joined by Carmela Starace. Do you prefer Starace? I know there's an Italian pronunciation of your name also, Carmela. She's an attorney with Prosperity Works, a nonprofit that advocates for low-income New Mexicans. And then later this hour, we'll also be joined by PRC Commissioner Jason Marks, who represents an Albuquerque district. He's going to join us about halfway through the program. But we do want to hear from you and hear what your thoughts are on scandals that have racked the PRC over the years, and also the measures that the legislature passed this year that have some reforms that will go before voters in the fall. Give us a call. The number is 277-5866, locally here in Albuquerque. You can also call toll-free 877-899-5866. And we have a couple of online ways for you to participate. Also, we take your emails to callinshow@kunm.org. The shorter and more concise your emails are, the more effectively we can get most of your thoughts on the air. We are limited by time, of course. And you can also post comments on our website when you click on today's call-in show topic. There's an area down at the bottom where you can post your comments, and all of our web users and listeners who go online to KUNM.org can see and read your comments also. So first of all, good morning, Fred. Good morning, Carmela. Thanks so much for joining me this morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I want to start off just briefly with a question about why the PRC matters. What makes the Public Regulation Commission so important to New Mexicans? I know both of your organizations consider the PRC to be a very powerful commission in New Mexico. Fred, let's start with you. This is something that I think New Mexico worked on a report and has chosen the PRC as the issue of the day, so to speak, for advocacy from your organization.
Well, I think it should matter to all your listeners, or at least all your listeners who have ever paid an electric bill, a gas bill, a telephone bill, or bought insurance, or driven in a taxi, bus, limousine, auto wrecker, ambulance, because they have such wide jurisdiction that they really affect almost every aspect of our lives.
And so you're referring to the PRC's jurisdiction over things like regulating ambulances, the fire marshal's office is included under the PRC, these kinds of things. But of course, many of the issues that people think of when they think of the PRC would be regulation of utilities in New Mexico, the telecom industry. Carmela, talk to me about Prosperity Works' perspective on the importance of the PRC.
The PRC commissioners are the most important people you've never heard of. They, at least three bills a month that you get are regulated by those five commissioners. And part of the power is that there are five of them, as opposed to a legislature where there's, you know, one vote out of 38.
I want to bring up the fact that I invited Commissioner Jim Hall and also Commissioner Teresa Bacenti Aguilar to join us today. They both either didn't respond or declined an opportunity to participate this morning. I also invited Majority Leader Michael Sanchez. There was some coverage during the legislative session of how bills were kind of sitting in a not being introduced on the floor of the Senate, some of the reform bills, and he was kind of seen as somebody who was resisting the reforms because he was holding back the reforms. And he was also invited to join us this morning. We didn't hear back from him. He did serve on a subcommittee in 2002 that examined the Public Regulation Commission and looked at some of the issues that we're going to talk about today. And we'll get to those in just a moment. But I want to look at this issue. You mentioned, Carmela, the most important people that you've never heard of. And I want to get both of your feedback on why people don't maybe are unfamiliar with what the PRC does, or unfamiliar with who serves on the PRC, and where you think that lack of understanding comes from. Carmela.
Well, we take government, we take civics in school, and we hear about the House and the Senate and the three branches of government. But there's smaller, there's sub branches under those three branches, and the PRC is one of those smaller branches that is not so sexy.
Why is the PRC sexy?
Not that the commissioners aren't sexy. They're sexy. because utilities, rate making in utilities, it's not something that's going to keep you up at night because you can't put it down.
Fred, your thoughts on that? The sexiness of the PRC as a commission, not the commissioners themselves.
Right. I agree with Carmela. It's a very technical, complex arena of public policy making, and it's very inaccessible to the public, I think, for that reason. And, you know, people's electric bills, you know, might be $100, say. That would be a high bill. And people are not going to go up to Santa Fe to sit through hours and hours of tedious hearings that are filled with jargon to fight those rates. So we need people like Carmela and the AG's office and others. And you know, we need the industry to be represented. And that's why we have the Attorney General's office and groups like Carmela's, is to represent the public who, you know, people are working two jobs, don't have time to go and sit through those hearings.
But isn't that a critique that could be made of a lot of what goes on in the legislature, for example, or in public regulation in general, that it's something that people don't engage with so deeply? What makes the PRC different?
Well, for one thing, a bill in the state house will maybe be 2 pages, whereas the applications for the rate increases are 1,000. And I think Red has done a good job of articulating that, you know, say you are in favor of a bill that's in the legislature. You are for third grade testing. You can put that in a headline. You know, go to your senator. Dear senator, please support this bill. I am for third grade testing. Not so easy when you're talking about what the revenue requirements are for a gas company and how to raise those funds through the ratepayers.
Are you familiar with the PRC? Are there issues that the PRC oversees that you have deep feelings about? Give us a call now. The number is 277-5866 locally here in Albuquerque. You can also call toll-free 877-899-5866, or you can send us an email to callinshow@kunm.org. I've heard commissioners...
Elaine, can I say one other
Absolutely.
Thing just before we go on?
Absolutely.
Yeah, the meetings are held twice a week, and these aren't in a closed room. So, you know, if people do want to get engaged in this, there is open public comment every Tuesday and Thursday before the five commissioners right at 9:30. And the commissioners are very generous with their time listening to anyone who wants to come up and give input.
Are there other commissions that meet on such a frequent basis? And is that a function of the broad scope of what the PRC does? Is that why they meet so often?
I can't think of another one that meets
that might be
that
a question for Jason.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, so I've heard PRC commissioners described as the most powerful people in New Mexico, even more powerful than legislators. Is that a perspective that either of you would ascribe to?
Well, it depends. I mean, I think they do affect our lives on a daily basis, the decisions that they make about utilities and insurance and motor transportation. I feel like the legislature is pretty powerful, too, in that sense that, you know, passing a $5 billion plus budget really affects us on a daily basis and, of course, all the laws. So I think they're comparable in that sense, but very different in the sense that legislators are making decisions about policy and you don't really need technical training. It's a matter of your philosophy and your ideology and so forth. But to be a PRC commissioner, you really need a background in lots of different things, law, economics, engineering, and it tends to be much more technical than the public policy matters that become before our legislature.
Carmela, you have thoughts on that?
I don't think there is a degree that you could have that would prepare you for being a commissioner just because you would need 5 or 6 different ones. But I do think that the material you need to know to be a good commissioner is accessible to you or could be. I mean, I think that's where the reform is. I don't think it's about the education you have before you get there. I think it's about the education that would be provided once you were elected.
We're going to get to this issue of qualifications of commissioners. That's one of the measures that was passed this year by lawmakers. And we're going to come back to that in just a moment. But I want to touch base here on some of the recent scandals that various commissioners have been involved in. Fred, could you just briefly kind of recap the Jerome Block Jr. story briefly for our listeners? And then I'll go to Carmela to talk about... Commissioner Sloan, just to kind of, can you kind of just tell that story? Fred, start with you. And just so our listeners, if they're not familiar, there may be few of them who are not familiar, but let's just cover that briefly.
Well, I think Commissioner Block ran into some troubles abusing a state gas card that he was issued and buying things that weren't really related to, you know, chimichangas and burritos and some Gatorade, cigarettes, things like that. And I think things began to unravel after that. And so he was brought up on charges and pleaded guilty to a number of felonies related to that. He had also been under investigation, really stemming from his election to the PRC for abuse of public campaign finance dollars that had been given to his campaign that he had said had been used for one thing and turned out that they were used for another. So he was removed from office.
Mm-hmm. Carmela, what are one of the other behavior of commissioner not becoming a commissioner stories is I believe it was Commissioner Sloan. I think she was convicted of battery and was convicted of a couple of felony counts, and then she refused to leave her position, and then the Supreme Court removed her from her commissioner position. It's one of the more recent examples of this kind of unethical behavior by commissioners that has, I mean, how do you think these stories have affected the public's perception of the PRC?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I would argue that the problems at the PRC, they have these very large structural problems that just removing Jerome Block didn't solve in just the way that the PRC was created. It's way too powerful. It has too many things on its plate, and there are too few qualifications, in my estimation, to serve. You know, those qualifications right now are that you're at least 18 years of age, you've lived in the state for a year, and you're not a convicted felon, which is what, you know, got Commissioner Sloan
removed.
And Commissioner Block removed from office. But we think, given the complexity of what's in front of the PRC, that they really do need greater qualifications than just a residency requirement, an age requirement, and not being a convicted felon. I like to joke.
Although those are the same requirements for being the president of the United States. And I don't know that we need to mandate educational requirements on commissioners when we don't have those same mandates on our representatives or our senators or our federal leaders.
Have the scandals that the PRC has experienced over the years in some way served the PRC in the sense of creating more public attention and bringing more kind of sunshine to the commission?
Well, if there's a silver lining to the corruption, it is that it's at least educating the public on what the PRC is and how they affect the daily lives of New Mexicans.
We're talking about the Public Regulation Commission this morning on the KUNM Call-In Show. We're joined in the studio this morning by Fred Nathan. He's with Think New Mexico, a nonprofit think tank. We're also joined by Carmela Starace. She's an attorney with Prosperity Works, a nonprofit that advocates for low-income New Mexicans. We're going to take a quick break right now, and we'll be right back to take some of your calls. This is the KUNM Call-In Show.
Summer Prep offers more than 90 academic outdoor arts and sports classes for K-12, including mathematics, theater, rock climbing, soccer, and all-day camps for young children. Visit sandiaprep.org. This message sponsored by Sandia Prep School, a tax-exempt organization.
Support comes from Saggio's, homemade real Italian pizza, calzones, pasta, salads, and desserts, serving Albuquerque and the UNM community since 1968. Saggio's encourages support of public radio KUNM on Cornell Southeast across from UNM and at saggios.com.
This is the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm Elaine Baumgartel. It's about 18 minutes past 8 o'clock, and this is the KUNM Call-In Show. We're taking your calls this hour about the Public Regulation Commission. What are your thoughts on recent scandals that the commission has experienced, and what are your thoughts on the reforms that have been passed by lawmakers this year in the session? They will go before voters this fall. There are various constitutional amendments that we're going to talk about in just a minute. But first, I'd like to go to a few calls. Let's hear from Valerie in Santa Fe. Good morning, Valerie. You're on the air.
Good morning. I'm calling specifically to say thank you to Fred Nathan for sticking with those reform bills at a time when they were thinking of just, you know, burying them and putting them aside. Now is the most critical time to work on these reform bills.
Thanks, Valerie. Let's take another call from Frank in Albuquerque. Good morning, Frank. You're on the air.
Good morning. I'd just like to thank KUNM and also Think New Mexico for all the work they've been doing. You know, the PRC really does have an inordinate amount of power, and unfortunately, often it acts in the interest of the corporations and not in the interests of the consumer, and in particular case I was involved in, I'm actually disabled and I've had a heart attack and I qualified for a phone for medical reasons, but the phone company approved the phone, but then took my internet service away, which I need to have as a college student at UNM, claiming that since I was so disabled, I didn't need internet service to go to school. So, you know, the PRC is aware of the situation that involves me, but I just think that the structure at the PRC really does favor corporate interests, and we need consumer advocacy for low-income people. And I just think that we need to take a better look at how the PRC is operating. And again, I'd like to thank KUNM and thank New Mexico for this program.
Thanks, Frank. Carmela, what are your thoughts on Frank's situation, given the work that you do at Prosperity Works?
Well, Prosperity Works does advocacy work for low-income New Mexicans, and I would encourage Frank, if he is not getting the results he needs on his own, to seek out a lot of the resources that are available to him to help him do what he needs to get done at the PRC, which are free. He can call organizations like Prosperity Works. You said you were attending college. The community college also has resources available to help limited income students with their utilities and telecommunication needs.
Great, thanks. I want to go now to set up this conversation about the measures that were passed in the legislative session this year. There were three measures that were passed. The first one that I want to talk about last is the one about qualifications of commissioners. But let's first talk about the I'm thinking of this image, Fred, that is on the front of the Think New Mexico report that shows this trail horse loaded to the gills, if trail horses have gills, with all of these different packages that represent the different things that the Public Regulation Commission is responsible for under New Mexico state government. And the cute thing, of course, is that this trail horse is wearing PRC roller skates on this mountain hill. And there are things including regulation of natural gas pipelines, oversight over the telecommunications industry, oversight over utilities, then there's railroad crossings and ambulances, and there's a whole bunch of different things that all fall on the back of the PRC trail horse, so to speak. And one of the things that is, there's a proposal, one of the measures that was passed is to remove one of the oversights over corporations, to send that to the Secretary of State's office. Can you explain that measure and why Think New Mexico advocated for that?
Sure, Elaine. So one of our overarching goals was to pare the PRC back to its core mission, which we feel is just regulating utilities, which is in and of itself a full-time job before you layer on things like insurance and corporations. So one of the things that the PRC does that's not well understood is a very ministerial job of registering and collecting paperwork from various corporations. The Secretary of State also does that. So, for example, in New Mexico, if you're a limited liability partnership, you file with the Secretary of State. But if you're a limited liability corporation, LLC, you file with the PRC. 35 states have a sort of a one-stop shop, much more efficient for businesses, at the Secretary of State's office. So what this amendment simply did is take the jurisdiction over corporate filings and registration at the PRC and consolidate it at the Secretary of State's office, as 35 other states do.
And the origin of this function of the PRC is that the PRC was kind of a marriage of two separate commissions, the State Corporation Commission and the Public Utility Commission.
Correct.
And so that's the legacy is that aspect of regulation of corporations fell under the PRC. And
right.
So in a sense that when the PRC was created and married these two commissions, there were a bunch of stuff that kind of came in together under the PRC. And then these new measures, do they represent kind of a disarticulation or a dispersal of responsibilities of the PRC back to other parts of state government?
That's right, Elaine. We're trying to find, more efficient, better places to put these functions. And they're together really more for historical reasons than any sort of logical reasons. And that's a perfect example, the corporate registration. And it's not really working very well at the PRC. You know, at the Secretary of State's office, I understand it's about a half an hour. At the PRC, it can be 2 weeks to file these things. And now they're charging an expedited fee where you pay about 10 times more than the $30. You pay $300 to get it done in a half hour. So this will make things, I think, more efficient, and it just makes more logical sense.
Let's take another call. Robert in Albuquerque. Good morning, Robert. You're on the air. Looks like we may have lost Robert. We'll hope that he gets a chance to call back. If you'd like to join the conversation this morning with your comments about the reforms of the PRC that were passed during this legislative session, you can call us locally here in Albuquerque at 277-5866. You can also call toll-free 877-899-5866. You can shoot us an email to callinshow@kunm.org. You can also post your comments on our website at kunm.org. Talk to me about the third proposal,
okay,
which I have.
This is the insurance proposal.
The insurance proposal. Thank
you. So the Department of Insurance is under the Public Regulation Commission, and when Commissioner Marks is here, he can tell you that regulating insurance is also a full-time job. And no one is really satisfied with how that's working right now. And part of the problem is that you have one superintendent of insurance who reports to five commissioners, oftentimes with competing political agendas, and it's become something of a turnstile. So, for example, last year we had five superintendents of insurance during a four-month period. We went from Mo Chavez to Craig Dunbar to Tom Rushton to Johnny Montoya to John Franchini, and that really hasn't served either consumers or business people very, very well.
What, Carmela, what is your take on this, the PRC's oversight of the insurance industry, and how does Prosperity Works see that role?
Well, I think that Fred is correct that is a completely separate full-time job, and you can really only ask people to do so much. I think, we've been touched on corruption. I think part of the corruption might be, at the end of the day, people being unable to meet the task they're given because it is an impossible task. And I think Think New Mexico did a really good job with those bills and pairing back what the PRC is going to do so that they can do it well.
Some of the other suggestions or topics that were discussed in the report that the subcommittee put out in 2002, looking at the Public Regulation Commission, are these questions about whether commissioners should even be elected, whether commissioners should be appointed instead. And we have a question from a listener, Cynthia, who sent an email in this morning. She writes, there is a cap on donations to candidates for the PRC of $500 per person under a new law that went into effect last year. But if candidates are allowed to use funds from previous races to run in this PRC race, which they are allowed to do, doesn't this still allow too much influence on those candidates from large donors? She writes, what happened to the legislative proposal to have commissioners appointed rather than elected, and wouldn't having them appointed help solve the problem of commissioners being too influenced by moneyed interests? I'd like to bring Jason Marks into the conversation right now. He is a PRC commissioner, and he serves in a district representing part of Albuquerque. Good morning, Commissioner Marks. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Elaine. Hi, Carmelo and Fred.
Good morning, Commissioner.
Good morning.
Okay, good morning to everyone listening.
What about this question of appointment of commissioners versus election of commissioners? It's not a measure that was passed. I don't know if it was even introduced this year in the legislature, but it's a suggestion that's been bandied about for over a decade.
Yeah, there was a measure introduced this legislature that would have made it an appointed position, and it did not make it out of its first committee. I think that. And I think that's really the story there, is that in my 7 years on the committee or the commission, I've changed my mind. I originally was a very strong proponent of elected commissioners. Having been here 7 years, I think we probably would be better off with an appointed commission, but it's not a politically viable solution. It's not something that's likely to make it through the legislature, as witnessed by the fact that it didn't go anywhere this year. And what we're hearing from the general public and the voters is that they would prefer to continue to have the power to elect who's making these decisions. So if that's off the table, you have to look at, well, what other things can we do to make an elected commission better? And that's that was the genesis of what Think New Mexico and others have been looked at this year and came up with some ideas.
We got an email, a comment from Larry Compton, just clarifying and a correction. A candidate for U.S. House must be 25 years old, for senator 30. The president must be 35. His comment is that Jerome Block was a kid with no experience in anything, he writes, except using drugs. That's the quote from Larry Compton's comment this morning. He writes that he believes that Jerome Block got elected because of his father's political connections. And that's just in response to your comment earlier, Carmela. And you were probably, I think you were referring to qualifications in national office as opposed to age. But
right. I wasn't saying the specific age is the same.
But it's a good clarification to make that PRC commissioners are required to be 18 years of age. And it's a different level of lifetime experience even that is being required by New Mexico law. I want to take one more email comment here from one of our listeners who writes, I think modifying electric rates is very sexy. We were talking about the sexiness of the PRC versus the sexiness of PRC commissioners. And she writes, it would be great to pay less. Would you please tell me if the poor are more likely to have to rely on electric heat in the winter? She writes that she doesn't know. She knows that she does. And she never has a $100 PNM bill in the deep winter. It's more like $200. Jason, when you think about your role in oversight over utilities, is that something that you would like to see the PRC focused on, utilities and things like telecommunications, as opposed to some of the other various packages that your commission's pack horse is carrying?
Yes. I mean, there's a trade-off. And if we can focus more on electric rates, on telecom rates, and even on some of the motor carrier issues and other things, I think we can do a better job. And I also think those other things, in particular, insurance is a huge area. Joint resolution that we got through the legislature that's going to go to the voters, and I think it's important that the context for all this, these are decisions the voters are going to get to make in November. The first step was getting it through the legislature, but the voters will have the final word on this. Insurance is just a huge area. It's about a third of the PRC. It's a very important industry. It needs to be regulated in the public interest. Consumers need to be watched out for there, just like on electric rates. And I've found in 7 years that it is really difficult to follow everything that's going on in insurance and also follow what's going on with the PNM cases and the Quest CenturyLink cases and the other things where I have to make a vote on. The way insurance is set up right now, the commissioners don't vote on the regulatory orders. The superintendent has that jurisdiction. There are a couple of small areas, or maybe not so small areas, but there are just couple of areas within his jurisdiction where you can take an appeal to the PRC, and even there it's an on-the-record appeal, so we don't get to take new evidence. We can just second guess and remand to the superintendent. So it's hard for me to spend the time that we ought to spend to follow what's going on in insurance, and if I do that, then I don't have the time to spend on the PNM cases and the Quest cases. So I would hope that, and I think we'd make a better PRC if we can spin off a couple of the functions that don't fit as well with the other things we do here, particularly by that I mean the insurance function and the corporations function.
Jason Marks is a PRC commissioner representing an Albuquerque district. He's joining us by phone this morning. We're also joined this morning by Fred Nathan of Think New Mexico and Carmela Starace of Prosperity Works. We're taking your calls this morning on this conversation about the Public Regulation Commission measures that were passed this legislative session that would change the types of things that the Public Regulation Commission oversees in New Mexico. And we're going to get to this proposal about qualifications of commissioners, but I want to get the numbers out again. 277-5866 is the number to call locally here in Albuquerque. You can also call toll-free 877-899-5866 or send us an email. And I'd like to take a call now from Cynthia in Albuquerque. We read her email question earlier, and she's got a follow-up question. Good morning, Cynthia. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, thank you for having me. I understand there is a new law that requires that if somebody's running for PRC, they're not allowed to get contributions that are greater than $500 per person. But I also understand that candidates who have accumulated money in previous races are allowed to bring all that money forward, and that's money that has not been subject to that cap. If we're trying to make sure that our commissioners, our newly elected commissioners, are not beholden to moneyed interests, you know, people who are bigger donors, people who donate more than $500, how come we have laws that are allowing that to happen?
Jason, do you have thoughts on that?
Elaine, yeah, first of all, clarification. The contribution limits are of $500 are not a new law. It's been in effect since the creation of the PRC. When I ran in 2004, I wasn't allowed to take more than $500 per election from any one donor. PRC commissioners are also restricted from taking contributions from the industries we regulate from taking gratuities from the people we regulate or from the people who appear before us as interveners. And that's one of the great things. You know, we're talking, there's a lot of focus on what hasn't worked well with the PRC, but one of the things that has worked well is that the PRC commissioners have been financially insulated in a way that, you know, the governor and the legislature are not, from the people who have a financial interest in the decisions we make. So we don't take meals and we don't take trips from them. With respect to the caller's question, the laws are not within our control at the PRC. The legislature makes those laws. The Secretary of State enforces it. It was the Secretary of State who decided about what to do with existing campaign accounts. One other thing we have with the PRC is we've got publicly financed elections. And when we go that way, I ran publicly financed in 2008. We're not taking contributions from anybody. We're taking $5 qualifying contributions from hundreds of members of the general public. And then we run with public money. It's a limited amount of money. And it's a clean election. They call it clean elections, and it is. And it's the way all elections ought to be.
Carmela?
I just want to say that as somebody who participates in the process as opposed to a commissioner, that I've
First, you're talking about participating as an intervener.
Right.
Briefly explain Prosperity Works' role as an intervener.
Okay. So whenever a utility wants to adjust their rates, they'll appear before the commission, and then parties are allowed to intervene to either support or oppose the rate increase. And Prosperity Works tends to oppose rate increases and has appeared before the commission on these issues, both at gas and electric utility rate increases. And I agree with everything Commissioner Marks is saying. You know, I mean, I know we talk a lot about corruption at the PRC, but one of the things we don't see is our commissioners are not bought and paid for by the utilities at all, which I think you can see in other states.
Let's take another call. Let's go to Clifton in Albuquerque. Good morning, Clifton. You're on the air.
Good morning. Thanks for taking the call. Thanks for having this wonderful forum. My question for your panelists is that we are, according to some thinkers, approaching the end of the fossil fuel era. We can debate how far away that end is, but given that it's generally a fixed resource and that humans' use of it is on the climb, we know that it's getting sooner and sooner. And, through the course of my lifetime, I remember the scandals of the PRC going way back. I remember a PRC commissioner who owned a bus line who ended up being held responsible for the death of people because the bus had bald tires. And so the idea that, the PRC doesn't seem to have many qualifications. What are they doing? Who are they serving? And so I want to ask how the PRC can shift their focus from at least the appearance, and I always believe where there's smoke, you got to ask the other question, how can they shift their focus from the appearance of representing the utilities, including phones, gas, electricity, etc., and better represent the consumers, particularly with the idea of how can we move away from a hierarchical top-down approach to energy and towards a distributed energy model where we use smart grids and provide subsidies for using renewable energy. Who's going to be the representative of the consumer that pushes for that when, in effect, that's going to be taking away, quote, profits? And the other question, of course, is, you know, there used to be a model of where we as citizens would pay for the infrastructure that would deliver these natural materials that came from the earth and were owned by all of us, and that has evolved into a situation where we're paying for the gas. So when are we going to move away from that and move back to where we're paying for the infrastructure and sharing the energy, particularly renewables?
Jason, before we go to you with that question from Clifton, I just want to note that I did invite New Mexico Gas Company and PNM to participate in the show this morning. Both utilities declined, just so that listeners are aware. Jason, your response to Clifton's question.
Well, I think there was a lot more than one question in there, but I agree with Clifton that the future is not fossil fuels, and we need to get our state is on a path. We need to accelerate our progress to getting towards where our energy supply is based on clean and sustainable energy supplies. New Mexico is blessed with some of the best wind and solar resources in the West, and in my time, we on the commission, especially early on in my first 4 years, this commission led and pushed the utilities to do more and more. We passed rules requiring the utilities to deploy solar in the state when they were dragging their feet, complaining about the cost. We also passed the rules that have resulted in the programs for subsidies for customers who want to do their own solar systems, and now as a result, there's 150 megawatts of solar that's either in the ground or under construction right now, sponsored by the utilities, and something like 17 megawatts of customer-sided solar. And in contrast, back in 2006, there were 45 systems with less than 100 kW of solar in the state, of grid-tied solar. So this commission can be a force for planning for our energy of the future. As the question really was, well, what can we do about it? Make the candidates who are asking for your vote this November to take the two seats on the open seats on the commission, make them commit to a clean energy future. And, you know, let's get the benefits of having the elected commission.
Let's go to John in Albuquerque. Good morning, John. You're on the air.
Yes. The PLC needs to do more to protect disabled people from either having their utilities cut off or being harassed to make payments that we can't afford to make. And I'm speaking more here about PNM than about New Mexico Gas Company. New Mexico Gas Company is fairly easy to deal with. My only complaint is that their payment center is way, way down in the South Valley. So if I want to hand in my disability form that I have to have verified with my doctor every 3 months in person, which I always do.
Wait, John, so you have to verify your disability status every 3 months?
Every 3 months, you betcha. I have to go see a doctor every 3 months.
Wow. Carmela, is this something that you're familiar with your work with Prosperity Works?
Yes. Hi, John. This is a difficult thing, and I think the public really needs to have this on their radar, that some utility companies are going to make it harder and harder to qualify for that medical certificate that allows people to keep their utilities on during tough times.
Is that because disability status can sometimes be more of a permanent status for some people and a temporary status for other people? Is that why? Or,
you know, based on my conversations with the utilities, they feel like there's rampant abuse. We don't see that at all. You know, we hear the anecdote of the guy in Tanawan who owes $20,000 in his electric bill, and he, you know, he has a medical certificate, so he's not paying it. But the reality is 99% of the people whose utilities are being kept on through the medical certificate program need those utilities to run their nebulizers.
Let's take another call. Another John in Albuquerque. Good morning, John. You're on the air.
Good morning, everybody. Thank you. I guess what I want to say is this is all about profits, and the PRC stands between the profits of the corporations, including the insurance companies, and the rest of us. Other states have empowered citizen panels to deal with these companies and keep us from getting ripped off. Jason Marks convened a public meeting, made a deal with the insurance company, and then came back out and pretended to hold a public meeting when the deal had already been made in the back door. We need a citizen panel that isn't beholden to these corporations in any way, shape, or form. It's about keeping our rates lower, because there's no reason in these tough times for anybody to get a raise. Nobody else is getting a raise. Why should the insurance company get a raise? Thank you. That's my comment.
Jason, your response.
Okay. First of all, clarification. I think I was the one who said this was a backroom deal and it was wrong. So I was not part of that. But the commissioners are in a tough space. The law, and that law includes the U.S. Constitution, says that we can't deny a company a rate increase that they need based on their actual cost to deliver services and to the public. If we were to say to PNM, you know what, people are hurting, they can't afford your rates, you have to sell electricity at below your cost, not only would, they'd be at the Supreme Court in a heartbeat, and the Supreme Court would be enjoining us in a heartbeat. The law requires the commission to allow utilities to recover the cost of service. Otherwise, it's considered unconstitutional taking. So the challenge to do the job right is to make sure that we don't give a dollar more than that legal standard requires. And when the commission works right, I think we're doing that, and we're not deferring to the utilities. We're not giving them the benefit of the doubt. And that gets back to this issue of complexity. You know, the general public might think, PNM comes in, asks for 15% rate increase. Consumers say it should be zero, and the commission just says, let's just split the difference and give them 8%. It doesn't work like that. The way that you actually have to approach this is you take testimony and evidence and you look at numerous complex financial and legal issues and say, do they really have this cost for this prepaid pension asset? Is it really a benefit to the customer? Do they really, should the customers pay for this coal mine decommissioning cost? And you say yes or no on these things. In the end, that turns into the rate.
Jason, hang on with us for a minute. I'm going to take a quick break. We are talking about the Public Regulation Commission, and when we come back, I'd like to touch on one of the measures that was passed in the most recent session about increasing the amount of qualifications that are required for people running for seats on the Public Regulation Commission. We'll hear again from Fred Nathan of Think New Mexico and Carmela Starace of Prosperity Works. Jason Marks is a PRC commissioner, and he's joining us by phone. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with your calls.
Come hear internationally renowned expert on mood disorders, Dr. Haga Pakiskal, at a public lecture on March 6th at 6:30 at the Chemo. Dr. Pakiskal will speak about temperament, creativity, and blues musicians. New Mexico band Soul Shaker will be in the house to play the blues as well. For more information and to register, go to ideasinpsychiatry.unm.edu. That's ideasinpsychiatry.unm.edu. A message from the tax-exempt UNM Ideas in Psychiatry.
I loved my car. We had some great times together. I gave it a pet name, had my picture taken with it, paid fortunes to keep it going. But no matter how hard I try, it's just not working for me anymore. So I'm not going to let it just sit there until it's totally wasted and meaningless. I'm sending it to KUNM, where it's really needed and can do some good. They'll turn it into great radio, plus give me a membership and tax deduction. It can all end so easily. All I have to do is call 888-KUNM-CAR.
I'm Elaine Baumgartel. This is the KUNM Collins Show. If you'd like to participate in our conversation about the Public Regulation Commission, if you have thoughts on what kinds of qualifications you'd like to see commissioners have before they're elected, you can call 277-5866 or toll-free 877-899-5866. I did invite Commissioner Hall and Commissioner Bessenti Aguilar to join us this morning. They chose not to participate. I also invited Democratic Majority Leader Michael Sanchez to join us this morning. He was on a subcommittee that did a pretty extensive report on the Public Regulation Commission in 2002. He also declined to participate this morning. I invited the New Mexico Gas Company representatives and Public Service Company of New Mexico representatives to join us, and they also declined. So we have Fred Nathan from Think New Mexico, Carmela Star Ace of Prosperity Works, and Jason Marks, who is a PRC commissioner, joining us this morning. Let's take a few calls. Gladys from Taos, good morning. You're on the air. Maybe she was unable to wait this morning. Let's go back to this topic of qualifications. There was a measure passed. I believe the measure was introduced to require a degree or 5 years of experience. Jason, you explained to me that what was actually passed was a bit more generic. Can you briefly explain what the measure passed was that will go before voters in the fall?
Yes. It would amend the Constitution to add the following language. It'll say, "The legislature shall provide, by law, increased qualifications for commissioners and continuing education requirements for commissioners. This provision will be effective with commissioners elected in 2014 and later." So it's a generic, open-ended invitation or requirement to the legislature to put in some qualifications, but it doesn't say what they would be.
Carmela, the educational requirement, the requirement of a degree, was one of the kind of lightning bolt issues this session. I believe there are two commissioners who do not have degrees who are currently serving. Can you explain Prosperity Works' position on this question of whether commissioners should be required to have a degree?
Well, we just feel that, requiring a four-year degree, a generic four-year degree, not even a four-year degree that would be relevant to the industry, doesn't necessarily add any qualification. Like I said, there's no degree you could take that would teach you what you needed to know about utilities and all the things that the PRC does.
Although some people would argue that having a college degree indicates things about people's ability to go to school and learn a bunch of stuff.
But a lot of that ability is the ability to pay. I think it's a little bit elitist to say you need a four-year degree to be a smart person. I don't think it's about the education you get before you go there. I think the education should come as part of after you are elected, you have to go through a process that educates you on the very specific material that you would not have gotten as an English major.
Fred?
Well, when we studied this question, we looked at the statutes creating the PRC and what they specifically do. And the PRC commissioners are to be quasi-judicial officials, which is just sort of a fancy way to say they're to act like judges. And that's, for example, the PRC commissioners have to understand the rules of evidence, and they have to apply the law to the facts of each case.
That's not really the way it functions, though. The hearing examiners are the judges. The commissioners don't hear evidence. They hear a summation of the hearings from the hearing examiner.
But several rate-making cases have been reversed because of the rules of evidence were not applied, because commissioners were not present when these decisions were being made. And Judge Bossin, actually, of the Supreme Court, said these are quasi-judicial officials, and we would never tolerate this with judges. And so our point simply is, if you look at, for example, district court judges, court of appeal judges, Supreme Court judges, the attorney general in this state, they're required to have college degrees and graduate degrees, law degrees. And I think people wouldn't see it, would be outraged if we put in constitutional amendments to say, well, that's sort of elitist to expect judges to have law degrees.
I think you're talking about a difference of a profession that requires a degree as opposed to civic engagement, which just requires civic engagement, basically.
Let's take another call. Cynthia has called back, and I understand, Cynthia, that you are challenging Jason Marks in District 1 for the seat on the PRC. And join the conversation now. What was your comment about college degree requirements for commissioners?
Well, first of all, just to clarify, I'm not challenging Jason. He's termed out. He can no longer run.
Thank you for that.
And I wouldn't challenge Jason. He's done an excellent job, I think, representing District 1.
I just assumed that. Forgive me. Go ahead.
Oh, quite all right. No, and I strongly feel that commissioners need to have both a college degree and 5 years' experience, not a college degree or 5 years' experience, because, as Fred was saying, you know, it's like being a judge. It's a very complex job, and I particularly think it's unfortunate to argue that especially someone who's an advocate for the poor is saying that therefore we shouldn't have educational levels for the commissioners. The poor are far better served by commissioners who know what's going on and can hit the ground running and who don't have a learning curve of 2 or 3 years depending on how far back their knowledge base goes. And it also equates the poor with being uneducated, and that's not true also. There are many poor people in New Mexico who are extremely intelligent, have gotten scholarships in college, and have gone on to be very educated and useful members of society. So I strongly feel commissioners need to have that education level and experience level to serve the poor best.
Thanks, Cynthia. Thank you. Let's take one more call from Greg in Albuquerque. Good morning, Greg. And you're going to be our last call this morning, so as succinct as you can be.
I don't think this problem is ever going to be solved by looking at qualifications and credentials. The issue is really intentions and conflict of interest, represented by the term regulatory capture. Regulatory capture is, you know, when the industry captures influence over the staff or the commission. That is what has to be addressed, is how to stop the influence over staff and commission officer members. And I would like to see some type of ombudsman that would help define that. And I think my suggestion is that if an ombudsman or a third-party group via maybe like the University of New Mexico's Political Science Department would provide some type of input to any citizens panel to help offset the capturing influence over the PRC.
You know, I think that is a great point. I think another thing people should have on their radar is this idea that people have to have 5 years of experience in the utilities, because then you're getting a commission that is basically staffed by people who have been socialized by the utilities, and that is not going to be a consumer-friendly board.
Your last thoughts on this idea of an ombudsman-type position, Fred, and then I'll go to Jason, and we just have a few seconds left. So,
well, I just wanted to respond to this thing about having 5 years of relevant professional experience. I mean, Carmela could run for the PRC. She has that. And there are other consumer advocates, there are environmental advocates that regularly appear before the PRC who could meet that qualification and serve very ably.
Jason, your thoughts on something like an ombudsman position? Would you support something like that?
You know, we're working on something I think is going to be better. We also passed a memorial this session that is going to ask us and the Attorney General to fund study forming a fully funded and staffed office of ratepayer advocacy. So right now,
it might look kind of like that.
Represents small consumers, but he has two attorneys and no other staff to do every PRC case.
I'm going to have to stop you there, Jason. Thanks so much for joining us by phone this morning. Jason Marks is PRC Commissioner in District 1. Fred Nathan of Think New Mexico joined us this morning in the studio. Also, Carmela Star Ace with Prosperity Works. We'll be back next week with a conversation about Los Alamos National Laboratory, the delay of the controversial $6 billion CMRR nuclear facility, and the lab's planned staffing cuts. You can send us an email or call in live during the show at 8 a.m. next Thursday morning here on KUNM. You can send us an email with tips or comments to callinshow@kunm.org. Engineering this morning by Roman Garcia. Our news intern is Andy Lyman. Thanks so much for joining us. I'm Elaine Baumgartel. This is KUNM.
We'll be right back.
whether you think you can or you can't, you're right. That famous quote from Henry Ford demonstrates the power of the mind. What if there was a spiritual philosophy that was based on understanding the mind's power? The Rio Grande Center for Spiritual Living is that place. If you're looking for a spiritual home, come any Sunday at 10 a.m. at the Hotel Albuquerque Chapel. For more details, visit riograndecenterforspiritualliving.org. A message from the tax-exempt Rio Grande Center for Spiritual Living.
This is New Mexico's community-powered public radio, KUNM. At 89.9 Albuquerque Santa Fe, KRRT 90.9 Arroyo Seco Taos, KRRE 91.9 Las Vegas, KRAR 91.9 Española, and KBOM 88.7 Socorro, with translators at K220.